est sur location.
De quoi le sortir?
Location. Location.
Welcome to Echolocation, the winter 2021 edition. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lo Judas, and tonight we'll be flying through the soundscape as we ease our way into the dark, chilly days and the long, quiet nights. In the woods, few dare to break the silence of the early winter evenings. Darkness falls like a shroud and animals grow quiet. There are those intrepid souls who dare sing their love songs during these long nights, but they are a rarer breed than most. What comes to mind is the coyote's howl. And the hoot of the owl. Coyote's commotion is common around these parts, but lately I've been entranced to hear a more unlikely sound, the call of the great horned owl. This large bird's quiet nocturnal habits make it go unnoticed. In the northeastern U.S., it's unusual to hear great horned owls, except in the dead of winter when they breed and rear young. The owl's subtle song is a welcome sound on the nearly silent evenings of early winter. And it's one we don't hear if we're warm indoors. The owls of the Northeast all share some commonalities that make them seem rare to humans. Most are nocturnal. Many roost in holes in trees and are camouflaged to look like bark, so we don't even notice them in the daytime when they're sleeping and we're about. We're more likely to hear them than see them. But some species are silent, unless it's breeding season, and many breed in the wintertime. So if you force yourself to go outside into the dark and the cold, you may be rewarded with their sounds. So here's a little compendium of the owls you might expect to hear in the Hudson Valley. The screech owl's eerie call might make you think there's ghosts in the woods. It sounds otherworldly, but screech owls are widespread in the countryside. These small owls nest in holes in trees. And their plumage resembles the coloring and patterns of bark so closely it provides a perfect camouflage. The northern saw-whet owl is another very small owl, and it's one of the most common owls in North America, but they're highly nocturnal and they're rarely seen. They also are cavity nesters, and they also roost in deep in evergreen forests during the day. The barn owl is a medium-sized pale owl with a white heart-shaped face and dark eyes. It's uncommon in the Hudson Valley, but like its name implies, it will nest in barns and silos as well as cavities in trees. After dark, barn owls fly low over open fields, grasslands, and marshes, listening for prey scurrying below. They're thought to have the best ability of any animal to locate prey by sound alone, and they can catch mice in complete darkness even when hidden by vegetation or snow. The males make a long, harsh scream, and often they call repeatedly from the air, while the females are mostly silent. Short-eared owls are grassland species that are seen in the daytime more often than other owls, and they can fly very long distances and are found around the globe, even on the Hawaiian Islands. But they're pretty rare to see in New York, and you're more likely to see them in the wintertime than any other time of year here. Snowy owls are other wintertime migrants to our area. They're native to the Arctic, but when their favored prey, which are lemmings, are in low supply, they venture south in the wintertime. And they're kind of unmistakable owls. They're large and white with dark markings. And I'll post some resources on the Echolocation Facebook page, which is facebook.com/echolocationWGXC. And the last owl that I'm going to feature tonight is the barred owl, which is one that a lot of us here in this area because they're very vocal and they call year-round. So if you live near the woods, you're likely to have heard barred owls. This native of the northeastern U.S. has been expanding its range west and south. And in some parts of the country, they're considered invasive, and they're outcompeting and interbreeding with rare species such as the spotted owl in the Pacific Northwest. But I'm glad to have them in my neighborhood. They're very vocal, and sometimes their calls sound quite rambunctious. And you might think there's a bunch of monkeys in the woods.
Thank you.
Even if you're lucky enough to hear an owl call, you're not likely to hear it fly off. That's because most owls have velvety flight feathers that are especially adapted for silent flight. So prey doesn't hear the owl coming, and the owl's keen sense of hearing won't be disrupted by the sound of its wing beats. Owls aren't echolocators, but they have certain features that make their hearing very acute. An owl's range of audible sounds is similar to humans. But an owl's hearing is much better at certain frequencies, enabling it to hear even the slightest movement of its prey. Owls' ears are located at the sides of the head behind the eyes. If you saw them, you'd notice that the two ears are asymmetrical in their positioning. In many owl species, the left ear is positioned lower than the right, and the two are also out of line in the vertical plane. Such asymmetry generates a tiny amount of separation between when a sound hits one ear compared to the other. This allows an owl to better pinpoint the source of a sound. When a noise is heard, the owl is able to tell its direction because of the minute time difference in which the sound is perceived in the left and right ear. For example, if the sound was to the left of the owl, the left ear would hear it before the right ear. The owl then turns its head so the sound arrives at both ears simultaneously, and then it knows that the prey is right in front of it. Strictly nocturnal species, such as the barn owl, have a very pronounced facial disc, which acts like a radar dish guiding sounds into the ear openings. The shape of the disc can be altered at will using special facial muscles. The translation of left, right, up, and down signals are combined instantly in the owl's brain and create a mental image of the space where the sound source is located. Studies of owl brains have revealed that the medulla, the area in the brain associated with hearing, is much more complex than in other birds. You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM in New York's Hudson Valley and worldwide at wavefarm.org. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lo Judas, and we just heard a song called Owl Side Theory from the Japanese rap duo Owls off their 2020 album 24K Purple Mist. Before that, we heard the track Sacred Talisman, a collaboration between Project 22 and Owl. We're going to turn now to a musician who composes music in the presence of natural sound. Sigurd Hoel has been a vital part of the Norwegian music scene for the past decade, both as part of different jazz ensembles and through his work related to Norwegian folk music. He released his first solo double bass album, Elvsang, or River Song, in January of 2018. In February of 2020, he released Leismarka, a solo double bass album recorded on the Arctic islands of Flavanvar in northern Norway. Leismarka can be seen as a response to the climate and ecological crisis, focusing on the conscious act of listening to the natural world, both on a concrete and on a more abstract level. We're going to listen to a track entitled Ritual. Thank you. It's time for news from the sounding board. A segment where we explore the latest from the weird world of sound. In an article entitled "I Scream, You Scream, Bees Scream Too," that was published in the New York Times on November 10th, writer Sabrina Imbler describes how Asian honeybees scream with their wings. And quoting directly from the article, "Bees do not scream with their mouths, but with their bodies. When giant hornets draw near and threaten their colony, Asian honeybees cock their abdomens into the air and run while vibrating their wings. The noise can sound eerily like a human scream." In a paper published Wednesday in the journal Royal Society Open Science, researchers described the ancient honeybee's unique acoustic signal, which is called an anti-predator pipe. The researchers colloquially refer to it as a bee scream. The bees make this sound as their nests are threatened by the Vespera soror hornet, which hunts in packs and can dispatch a beehive in a matter of hours. A December 17th press release from the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory reveals that the Juno spacecraft recorded the electromagnetic radio waves produced in Jupiter's magnetosphere. The spacecraft recorded the data as it made a close flyby of Jupiter's moon in June. Their frequency was then shifted into the audio range to make an audio track that was posted online. And you can find a link to this and all the stories in News from the Sounding Board at facebook.com/echolocationWGXC. And from The Guardian, an article by Damian Carrington, which was published on December 8th. The headline is, "Listen to the Fish Sing. Scientists Record Mind-Blowing Noises of Restored Coral Reef." And quoting from the story, "From whoops, purrs, snaps, to grunts and foghorns to laughs, a cacophony of bizarre fish songs have shown that a coral reef in Indonesia has returned rapidly to health. Many of the noises had never been recorded before, and the fish making these calls remain mysterious, despite the use of underwater speakers to try to talk to some. The reef had been devastated by blast fishing, where explosives are used to stun or kill everything in the area. The corals are now being restored, but the scientists wanted to know if the many other creatures that inhabit reefs were also returning. Visual surveys miss camouflaged animals and those that come out only at night, so the researchers turned to the noise of the reef. They found the vibrant soundscape was close to those of reefs that had never been damaged. Sound is vital for reef survival because almost all of its inhabitants, from corals to crustaceans to fish, produce offspring that spend the early part of their lives in the open oceans before using sound and other cues as a homing beacon to return." This last story isn't recent. It's from 2019, published in Geology, the website Geology. But it's pretty interesting, I think. The title of the story is Ringing Rocks, a Geological and Musical Marvel. And quoting from the article, although scientists don't have a definitive answer as to why the rocks ring, they do have a name for ringing rocks. They are called sonorous rocks or lithophonic rocks. These are the terms that are given to rocks that resonate with a bell-like sound when they are struck. These chime-like sounds come from geological phenomena known as ringing rocks. Physically, they look no different from regular rocks, but it's not until you lightly strike them with a hammer that the rocks reveal their sonic secret. And it turns out that these ringing rock fields can be found in southeastern Pennsylvania and central New Jersey. I think it's time for a field trip, an echolocation field trip, because there are three sites north of Philadelphia that are readily accessible to the public where you can go play these ringing rocks. So let me know if anybody wants to go on a field trip. You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM in New York's Hudson Valley and worldwide at wavefarm.org. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, and we just heard the instrumental version of a song called OWLS off of the album Blue Dream by a band called Owls. Before that, we heard the track Morke from Sigurd Hole as an accompaniment to the segment News from the Sounding Board. And right now we're going to have a bit of a flashback going back to pre-pandemic times, back to the innocent days of December 2019 when I featured vibrational communicators on the show. And I'm going to play an excerpt from that show to set up music from viola player Martha Mook, who features one of our vibrational communicators, an insect called the tree hopper, in her album Buzz, Music in Harmony with Nature. So during these long quiet nights, I started thinking about the only wildlife that seemed to be hanging around, which was the spider in its web in the corner of the room. And I began to wonder, how do those spiders communicate? Do they make sounds? And that question sent me down a wormhole that I've yet to emerge from. Because I found out that there's a whole branch of animal communication that I've never really explored. It's called vibrational communication. Animals that use vibrational or seismic communication convey information by causing a substrate to vibrate. The substrate maybe soil, or a plant stem or leaf, or a spider's web, or a honeycomb, or other materials. This type of communication is ancient, and it's been reported in mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, insects, arachnids, crustaceans, and nematode worms. Vibrations are created in a variety of ways. Some vertebrates use percussion, drumming with some parts of their bodies, to make the vibrations. For example, some mole rats and other rodents bang their heads against the walls of their tunnels or drum their feet on the ground to communicate with each other. Insects and spiders may use tremulation, which involves rocking the entire body with the subsequent vibrations being transferred through the legs and to the substrate. Or stridulation, which involves the rubbing together of two body parts to create vibrations. Animals use a variety of body parts to pick up the vibrations that are sent. Some snakes feel vibrations running through the ground with their lower jaws or through other sensors on their bodies. Many invertebrates and birds have sensors in their legs, and mammals have sensors in the feet or the lower jaw. Insects use plants that they're feeding on as the substrate to transmit vibrations that choreograph cooperative foraging forays. Some, like the tiny North American tree hopper, use vibrational communication to warn others about predators or to attract mates. Male tree hoppers use their abdomen to send vibrations through the host plant stem in the hopes of attracting a female. And apparently, even though we can't hear it, these vibrations can get pretty loud. Some researchers have compared the vibrational soundscape of a plant to choruses of frogs or crickets. So just for a second here, let's take a listen to the sound leafhoppers make vibrating a plant. And I'll post a link to the video of the leafhoppers making their vibrational communication sounds to the Echolocation Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/echolocationWGXC. So head over there if you want to take a deeper listen. Amazingly, plants perceive and respond to these vibrations too. Studies have shown that plants produce defensive chemicals in response to the vibrations made by insects chewing on them, and that they discriminate between vibrations caused by chewing and those caused by wind or insect song. So who knew that plants listen in on vibrations that insects make on their bodies? It's a new one on me. Maybe you guys all knew about it, but I can't believe it.
Thank you.
We've been listening to music by Martha Mook that features the sounds of tree hoppers. We heard Buzz 1, Tree Hopper, Buzz 2, Mohopper, Buzz 3, Panama Chorus, Buzz 4, Heteronus Panama, and Buzz 5, Ecuador Leaf Hopper. All of these tracks are from her album Buzz, Music in Harmony with Nature, which was produced with David Rothenberg. And all proceeds of that album are being donated to the Xerce Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Thanks for listening to this broadcast of Echolocation. We heard music from Martha Mook, Sigurd Hull, Owls, Project 22 and Owl, and Owls. And the band Wake Owl is going to play us out with Wild Country off the 2013 album of the same name. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, going into hibernation, but you'll hear from me in the springtime with another broadcast of Echolocation.
Don't know. hearing in our doors.